Welcome to the Business Trendsetter Podcast, where we talk about trends and lots of other things and what's coming next. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
We are Spark Partners. To learn about how to grow your business and trends and scenario planning and all kinds of stuff, go to our website, spend some time on our platforms, engage with us on social media, reach out to us via email. We're actually quite reachable. And my email is manny@sparkpartners.com. Adam's is adam@sparkpartners.com. And what we'd like to talk about today is revelry back to my youth in being a Boy Scout. Now, were you a scout, Adam?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Do you know what the scout motto is?
On my best, on my honor, to do my duty, to guide my country, to obey the scout laws, help other people at all times, to keep myself physically fit, mentally awake, and morally straight. Did I get that?
That's the scout oath, but that was that was a really good effort. The scout motto is to be prepared.
Be prepared, of course. Man, you caught me off guard with that.
I know, it was part of, you catch me off guard all the time, so I had to, stir the pot a little bit. We're in this time right now, and by the way, I think both you and I agree that it's a great time to be in business. Lots of things happening in the world, lots of places where you can make money, and then we have these events that happen in the world. We have these tragic events. We have this war happening in Ukraine and Russia. We've got the situation that happened in Texas last week, which is just unthinkable. We have all these big sort of iceberg size events happening, but we don't really know all the underpinnings. We just see that the tip of the iceberg, right? So I wanted to talk about how a business owner can be prepared, how they can be ready for these things that happen, and not just ready to react, but ready to lean in and really make some major waves. So let's just open up the conversation there, Adam. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, so I believe that scenario planning is an ongoing exercise. So we have a lot of people in our crowd that will think of strategic planning or even planning as a once-a-year event, do it for a few weeks, create some kind of a document, maybe make a couple of posters and put them on the wall, and then get back to work, right? It's kind of the thinking. And we keep trying to break that cycle and say, you really ought to be planning every single week. You need to look at the world around you, see what's happening in the world around you, and incorporate that and guide your decision-making with external events. And so what I say is what's really important is what's your view of the future? What's the world going to look like in 2030 and 2025? And if you don't have a good set of scenarios that you're headed towards, then you're operating from the past. You're on inertia. You're letting the past products, your past customers drive you forward rather than, hey, here's where I want to be in 2025, 2030. I don't mean where I want to be in terms of revenue or some number like that, but literally what would I be selling and, what's the world going to look like, how am I going to be successful? So a statistic came across my desk this week, and it was that in 2020 there were 4.4 million new business applications in the United States. Now, I think I got that number from Business Insider, so I'm not real, don't take that to heart. It could be off. But then they said in the same article, in 2022, there were 5 million new business applications. And so I kind of thought, well, that's a stat, and you could just go, oh, okay, who the frick cares, right, and pass it by. But really, that's the kind of thing that we should look at and start saying, wait a minute, what does that mean for my scenario planning? So the first one is it's telling you what's something we've been saying all along. The gig economy continues to grow,
yep.
Right? So the gig workers, some of them are struggling to make money. Some of them are doing great. It depends on which article you read. You can read about the person who's 26 and got $25,000 in debt and started some small business, and a year later they're doing $250,000 or $1 million of revenue. And then there's some others, the other articles out there about gig workers that are not making so much money. I think some of those are maybe driving Lyft cars, and gasoline expenses are very high. And you could say, I don't know how to interpret that. And come back to this big stat. There were 600,000 additional new business applications in 2022 over what there was in 2020. Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe 2020 was a reduced year because of the first year of the pandemic. So that might not be a good gauge. It's just the one they used in this article. But I think what we do see here is that the gig economy is powerful. And we'll keep saying on and on, okay, are you planning to do things? You know, are you going to sell things to gig workers? Are you going to provide them with services and products that help people who are at home working alone? You know, there's a fellow that I use now for my computer business. I'm feel real fortunate. I've tied into with this guy. And he's sort of like my IT guy. I now have somebody I can call up and ask him questions about why my computers are doing things. And I pay him a fee, right? And so he supports me. He's a gig worker, and I'm a gig worker. And now we're connected so that, you know, I've got some IT services. So are you connecting up to help people? That's why I take that one of the first takes I'd have on that. Another one that I'd have is that it talks to the great resignation. You know, it says, hey, the gig people we've been talking about this, people resigning, right? I don't think that's going to stop.
Yeah.
I think that people are starting to say, I have today in the news, Tesla's head, Elon Musk.
Yep, I was just going to say that.
Yeah,
pretend to work somewhere else is what he said, right?
Yeah. Go ahead. Do the whole quote for folks.
Well, yeah, Elon Musk, it was a leaked email where he said quote, pretend to work somewhere else is what he said to his executive staff. And actually, it was broadcast to everybody else after that. But,
yeah, and he said, you're going to come to the office, period. And if you don't put, you're going to put a minimum of 40 hours a week in the office, period. And if you don't put 40 hours a week in the office, I'm going to consider that you quit and you're fired and you're gone, right? And so I would say he's off trend.
Yeah, for sure.
More than a little bit. You know, he's got his demands, what he wants to do. And it'll be interesting to see how that works out for him. I don't think it'll work out well at all. The price of the stock is way down. Tesla stock's way down ever since he made the bid for Twitter. He could possibly go forward with the Twitter acquisition, which will divert his attention and money. You know, we talked before, we did a whole podcast about how Twitter revenue per user just isn't a big enough number. There's no plan to get it up. So winning the Twitter bid is probably going to be bad for him. But losing the Twitter bid costs him at least $50 billion of checks he'll hand out. I think he's very diverted. But the stock price is down. The Tesla stock price is down. That's what I'm driving towards. And here you have a company with a lot of employees. They're busting their can. They're trying to make sure that they're, you know, doing what they can for the company to move forward. But a lot of their compensation is tied to the performance of the company. And if that stock price remains down and their stock doesn't go up, then, you know, they're not going to get the bonuses and they're not going to be happy about that, right? So the great resignation means that those people might be moving on, go find something else to do, you know, rather than be forced to go to the office 40 hours a week for Elon Musk.
Yeah.
So, again, another output of this, you know, all these business applications is, hey, I think you better be flexible with your workforce. You know, be flexible about where they work so that you can keep them working. Because if you tick them off, like Elon Musk seems intent on doing, they're just likely to walk out the door on you.
Yeah, it's going to create definitely some waves.
Yeah, I think it's really got you know, and then remember, the demographics are working against us, right? We've been talking in these podcasts. Nothing's going to solve the problem of shortage of workers. We have too many older people that didn't have enough babies. And so now we don't have enough people that are between the ages of 40 and 20 to get the job done. And so as there more of them are constantly out raised to starting new businesses, boom, that just makes it that much harder to hire people. So your scenario plan better be sitting there saying, hey, I'm not going to solve the problem of a worker shortage.
So
got to go to robotics, AI, et cetera.
Yeah, let's zero in on that concept of scenario planning. You know, we've talked about this a lot, and sometimes the pushback that we get is that, you know, how can you plan for everything? And the answer is you don't plan for everything. You plan on what's happening in the world. You plan on these trends. So why don't we drill on that subject?
Well, I was just finished up in the last 2 weeks. I did almost 10 meetings, and it was very condensed. You know, people packed them in, and one of the things was everybody was talking about how they were going to get through this worker problem. You know, in the short term, I don't have enough workers. I'm trying to grow my business, and I don't have enough employees. But I'm going to, you know, long term, I'll get them hired. Well, that's just dumb. Right? Because now what you're saying is, I got a problem, and I think that somehow it's magically going to go away. And that's where the scenario planning comes in. If you're really thinking, and you're doing scenario planning, you're saying, wait a minute, this demographic problem is a long-term problem. I can't expect it to go away in a year. And what I better do is I better start figuring out how to solve a lot more of the, get the work done a different way, using robotics, using automation, using artificial intelligence or machine learning. I've got to figure out a way to get the work done with fewer people. And the leaders who do that are going to be more successful. So this is a very specific kind of a point. We start saying that the demographics should be built into your scenario plan, and you should be looking at them. When you get a stat like, hey, new business applications are up 600,000 to 5 million, you start saying, that's not solving my labor problem.
Right.
That's, in fact, saying I better find a different solution, which then again, you should be saying, wait a minute, that tells me the gig economy is growing. Could I reach out to the gig economy to get more done? Rather than hiring 10 people in my company, could I use 20 gig workers? Or maybe it's 10 gig workers could replace 10 employees to get things done. And that's how you're using the scenario planning, your future planning, to drive the decision making that you're making today. One last grip on this was thinking about what economic statistics are important. So, for example, now that we've got all these gig workers, they're not tracked real well, right? And so you're getting these Bureau of Labor Statistics, talking about how many people are working, how many jobs are being created, and if you look at those numbers, though, they don't reflect a lot of what's going on. There's nothing in those numbers that say that these new jobs, you know, people are leaving to go start their own companies. There's nothing in there that says really addresses the fact that there's just a shortage of workers. You know, they keep talking about the pickup rate or, you know, encouraging more people back into the labor force, but it's kind of like, well, where are they coming from? Well, it's mostly older people that are going back and getting part-time or full-time jobs. When I say older, I mean over 65 that are going back to work. And so you better start being thoughtful about what statistics you're looking at. Right now, everybody's paying attention to inflation, and everybody's worried about what the next step's going to be and how they're going to hire people. And the question is, are we going to have a recession? Are we going to have inflation? Are we going to have a recession? And I think what you got to look at is there's nothing here indicating we're headed towards a recession. You got full employment by old definitions of full employment. You've got businesses wanting to hire like crazy and can't get the workers. You go to the stores, there's still shortages on the shelves. I mean, we've certainly had this baby formula thing hit the press last month, you know, and talk about that shortage because, you know, a plant shut down. But I can remember before the pandemic, pretty much you went to a grocery store, all the shelves were full. Now, it doesn't matter where I am. I was in Milwaukee. I was in Chicago. I was in Ontario, Canada. I was in Dallas and Fort Worth. And I go into the grocery stores. It's just, I have a habit. It's one easy way to get a pulse of what's going on. And when you walk in and you see 20% of the shelves empty, right? Nice. You just randomly, you're looking around, like, okay, we haven't solved this supply chain problem. We still have demand in excess of supply.
Exactly.
And that's what's pushing prices up. It means you have to pay more for it. So that should tell you as a business person, okay, am I focused on costs? Am I trying to keep my costs down? Maybe now's not the time to do that. Maybe now's the time to say I'm going to pass along in a price increase, right? Inflation is here because of this imbalance, and it's going to take a year or more to work that through the system until we get people back to work. And that means we got to get people in China. You know, we get shutdowns in Shanghai and other major cities in China, so they're not making anything. That's a shortage of production. So, you know, when's that going to get resolved? Probably going to take months. So, again, this is why I say scenario planning is something that you should have that vision of the future. You should know what the big mega trends are. And then you should be saying, are the statistics feeding into my mega trend, or are they telling me that my mega trends are different? And that's to look around, you're going to try to figure out the next steps. And I want to tie this now to something else that came up. Two weeks ago, I was watching the news, and I was up in Canada, and they do a lot more in Canada, they do more reporting of the world news than we do in the United States, and we tend to be very focused on America. And so they were talking about the EU, European Union, military buildup. And it's just because of Putin invading Russia, you now have NATO a lot more active, and you have Germany and France, Great Britain, Spain, Italy. These countries have been letting their armies, navies, and air forces get smaller ever since World War II. And they've relied more on NATO, and they've relied more on the United States for their support mechanisms militarily. And what's happening is now that Putin's invaded the Ukraine, that you've got a lot of people waking up. You know, Finland and Sweden are have said we're going to join NATO. Now, all this you can look at and you can say, how does that affect my business? Well, the way it affects your business is right back to what we're talking about before. There's going to, A, there's not going to be enough people. You want to build up the military. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to have the military in competition with private industry for these prime age people, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
And so pay is going to go up for military people. They're going to get more because they got to attract them to get them in there. And it's going to make the need to hire people more difficult. So that tells you, you know, back to your scenario, you better be using robotics, automation. And now that's what you got to do. The second thing is look at the opportunities it's going to create. There's going to be to have a buildup in the military is always means you're spending money. Like, well, a lot of money usually, you know, trillions of dollars get spent on these buildups. And so consequently, you should be thinking about, is there an opportunity there for me? Could I be supporting? Could I be supplying software? Could I be supplying computer hardware? Is there technology I have? Is there, you know, what could I be doing to help, especially in a buildup, military buildup that's going to have fewer people and more automated warfare, more, you know, drone warfare, more of more planning, more warfare, more interaction with fewer people. How could you support that? Because the demographics are only going to
worsen. Yeah, the demographics are definitely on the side of the automation. And you know what's interesting is that the GDP of Russia and the GDP of Spain are about the same. People think that, you know, Russia's this massive superpower like it used to be, and they're not really where they're at. So I think there's also the economic side of the equation, and how do you get economies to produce? Through the use of people, or in this case, AI and these other things we're talking about.
Yeah, I think it's really, it is true that in the end of the baby boomers, or the baby boomers didn't really think about Russia. They thought of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was Russia, Ukraine, Chechnya, Georgia, Hungary, Poland, Czechoslovakia, you know, Yugoslavia. It was all these countries were part of the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union fell apart, Russia was a part of that. It was a big part of that. Think of it like California. You know, it was a big part of the Soviet Union. But it's much smaller, as you said, than people often give it credit for. And we're seeing right now that militarily they don't have the punch that we kind of thought they did, because they thought they'd have an easy time taking over the Ukraine. They clearly haven't. Things are not going well for them there. So again, what are we looking at is our scenario planning. How does that affect us? You know, what's going to happen? What I would say is we're going to find it more difficult to have global trade. We were entering into a period now where nobody's going to trust Russia for a long time. So software providers from Russia are not going to get hired. You know, we're going to have to see how that works out. I mean, we're going to have probably creates an immigration opportunity to bring highly skilled people that live in Russia to the United States. Because, you know, there are a lot of, I don't know how many when I say a lot, but, you know, a number that's worth looking at of people living in Russia that don't support the invasion of the Ukraine. And they're saying, you know, I'd like to get out. Well, maybe we should try to provide a pathway for those people so that we can get software programmers, AI programmers, and people like that that are currently in Russia out. So it's looking at the scenario and saying, how is this going to get worsen, right? How's the situation worsen? But then what are the opportunities that it creates? It's going to worsen because you won't be able to source people there, but it's an opportunity to bring them here and see what you could do, right? And the same thing in terms of looking at, you know, like I'm saying, it's going to be more difficult to have global business. Trust with China is low. It's one of the lowest it's been in 25, 30 years, right? Yeah. And now people are fearful of an invasion of Taiwan. And we've got, we just had an election in the Philippines where Imelda Marcos' son, you know, the great Imelda Marcos of 6 million shoes, who was married to a very corrupt dictator of the Philippines that stole billions of dollars. For some reason, the Philippine people, I don't know the country well enough, but they voted the son of that dyad in as president. And they, you know, it's been run by a strong man now for the last decade. So it looks like another strong man. So this idea of, you know, trust among leaders tends to be built upon economies that are based on democracies. Whenever you start seeing these lack of trust, then you're going to see less ability. So it means you're going to have to start saying that, wow, I used to be able, if I really quickly wanted to get some capacity, I could go to China. Or, I, you know, think of these Middle Eastern or Far Eastern countries, I could go get capacity really fast. Well, you may not be able to do that now. Right? You know, we're seeing a lot, there's going to be more laws around technology, you know, saying that you can't bring Chinese technology into the United States. So you have to look at that and say it's not going to happen as quickly. But at the same time, that means, hey, maybe I should be doing more business in South America. Maybe I should be doing more business in Mexico,
right.
Places like that.
Yeah, right? I'm helping one of my coaching clients is building a device that he is having some significant woes bringing from China. And it's not even technology. It's just it's material. It's a supply chain issue. And it's going to be interesting for those that are heavily reliant on China for imports to see how that sort of fares for them long term.
Right. So, again, what we're trying to do, I think, in this podcast today is say, we always talk about trends. We say, oh, here's this trend, here's what's going on. The issue here is saying, wait a minute, do you have a scenario for the year 2025 and 2030? Or are you letting inertia drive you? If your scenarios are saying, you know, this labor problem is not going to go away, international trade is going to continue to be a problem, supply chain interactions are going to be tough for the next 3 years. I mean, and then looking around, you're saying, are the facts of what I'm seeing supporting that? And if so, are you finding solutions for that problem? You know, right. And a lot of this is going to involve, again, using more gig workers, using more automation, artificial intelligence, robotics, finding ways to get things done in a different new way that fits the future world, right? And I think the last one I want to turn to is, events of the last few weeks was Robb Elementary in Uvalde, Texas, where there was 19 children and two teachers were shot and killed. And what I think we can look at this is we tend to look and go, oh, another shooting, and that's bad, and that's horrific. But I think what we have to really start to wake up and realize what the long-term implications of the fact is that we have so many guns in the United States. A lot of times we kind of like, there's nothing I can do about it. And I agree, as an everyday citizen, I don't know that you can do anything about it because it's all in the hands of the lawmakers and what they're going to do. But what I would point out is how close this is to everyone now. You know, my son, Alex, was at Northwestern University when a guy with a rifle started shooting up the engineering building. And it turned out that Alex was walking out, I think it was the north side of the building, as this guy walked in the south side of the building.
Wow.
And I remember when he was interviewed on television, he was just very, very distraught about the fact that there was a shooting on campus, and I think two or three people were killed. This would have been around, I want to say, around 2005-ish, I think, was about when it happened. And he was just very, very distraught over the situation. But now if you think about it, for 20 years, so I said 2005, this is 2022, right? There were school mass shootings way before that. There have been a lot of mass shootings after that involved schools, bars, everything else. We're getting to where all of us know somebody that's been very close to a mass shooting.
Yeah.
And so it is becoming, I'm sorry to say, much more of the norm. And we've become normalized to it. We've gotten to where, oh, you know, somebody shot up a group of people in Buffalo, New York. A week later, you shoot up a bunch of people in Uvalde, Texas. It's becoming much more of a norm. Now, is this part of your scenario? Are you thinking about implications? So I think it does have implications for business people. It's going to be one of them I thought of is, for example, tourism. I definitely know from talking to my colleagues and friends that people from outside the United States used to always think that the U.S. was a great place to go for a holiday. It was more expensive. If you lived in Great Britain, it was a lot cheaper to go to Spain or Portugal for vacation than the U.S. But if you could afford it, you'd like to go to Florida and you'd like to go for a vacation. Now people in these countries are saying, wait a minute. I'm not sure I want to get on a plane and fly to go to Six Flags Over Texas and Grapevine or to go to many attractions in Texas, many tourist attractions there. Do I want to go there whenever I don't know what's going on that I could be shot? And I have to admit, last week when I was in Dallas-Fort Worth, the number of people I saw walking around with a gun strapped to their legs was truly frightening to me. I mean, here's a major town, Fort Worth. I spent more time in Fort Worth than in Dallas in this trip. But, you know, again, I made my stop in at the grocery store walked around. And I'm just sitting there watching people walk in and out. And it's 7 o'clock in the evening. It's a little bit rainy. I had some dinner and I was going to go in and get a soda to take back to my room. And I'm watching them go in and out. I saw five people in a row walk out of that grocery store with a gun strapped to their legs, visibly strapped to their legs. I mean, this is not hiding this pistol in any way whatsoever. That must be normalized now to the people who live in that part of the world.
Here also in Arizona. And, you know, as we talked about in the past, you know, we don't get political in on the show, but we do talk about what we see and the implications with trends, right?
So now imagine you're from Norway, Sweden, Great Britain, France, you know, any of these places, and you come and you land and you go to a Phoenix, a Tucson, a Las Vegas, or, you know, someplace in Texas, or, but anyway, you go to one of these, Florida, one of these states that are liberal with their gun laws, and you know, you start seeing people walking around with a gun strapped to you. Like, when you live in a country that you don't see guns at all, it's extremely rare, you know. The army guy will have the gun, or the gendarmerie would have a gun, maybe. But to them, it's very shocking, right? And so you have to start saying, well, how much am I planning on immigration, on tourism? How is tourism part of my world? If you're a Vegas, or you're, you know, if you're in Orlando, Florida, those places can be very heavily dependent on tourism, and a lot of tourists from outside. And they're saying, wow, you know, in Vegas, there was this guy, what was it, 6 years ago? He broke out the window. Mandalay Bay. Most people killed everything. We shot like 120 people or some really high number. Killed all those people. And now you say, is that going to happen again if I go to Vegas? Or what's going to, you know, you land and you go down the street and then you see these people walking around with guns strapped to their legs. So again, what I'm trying to say is current events. Are you watching? Are you paying attention? Are you thinking about those in your scenario planning? I also know that it's affecting retail, you know. So it's happening enough that I'm less likely to go to stores now. I when I was a young boy, my father always said that only two kinds of people carry a gun: convicts and crooks. And so, convicts and cowards. As we said, little people carried guns around. And I'm looking around, and when I was in Vegas, I got to the point that, well, again, when I was young, I used to say, if I went into a building and there was an elevator and somebody got in the elevator with a gun, I wouldn't get in. Even if it was a policeman, I wouldn't get in. Why? Well, because I'm trapped in an elevator, here's a gun, something goes wrong, I don't want to be there, right? And so I've always made a practice in my life, if I see a gun, stay away. Go the opposite direction. So like I said, I'm in Texas. I'm watching these people going out of the grocery store, and I'm really wondering if I want to go in that grocery store, right? I wanted to get a bottle of soda, but I'm like, wow, I'm not sure I want a bottle of soda bad enough if I'm going to walk in there. Because these people, all it takes is a provocation, and all of a sudden they're going to whip those guns out. What's that provocation going to be? I don't know. Might not be that high. So now we start to see this will have an impact on retail, right? It will have an impact of some kind. Will it be big? We'll find out. But I'd certainly want to pay attention if I sold into retail or sold through retail. It's going to be better for the Amazons and the direct delivery people. Though these shootings are pushing people in that direction. They're pushing people, you know, more guns, more people walk around with guns, more shootings. It tends to make us more isolationist, more wanting to stay at home, stay safe, and not go out and get involved and get caught up in these other situations. And it's probably going to have an impact on immigration because I think that, well, the same reason people don't want to be tourists, when I talk to people, we used to always use the phrase, everyone always wanted to live in America, right? In the 80s, certainly when I traveled around the world, everybody that I would visit would talk to me about, you know, how to immigrate to America. They don't do that so much anymore. Now they talk about, you know, what's going on in America and, you know, what's the global stage and, you know, what's America's response and can America be trusted and things like that. So I think we have to pay attention to this if you're doing business. Then you have to start saying, you know, this. It's easy to normalize your thinking because you're letting inertia push you along. But sometimes you need to just stop, sit in the car, watch what's going on, watch television, pay attention to what's going on, bring these facts into your scenarios.
Just start thinking. Make it systematic, right? Write it down. Make it part of your weekly meetings. A lot of people don't really make it a plan of that, and so they don't really capture the information.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And again, these are trends we're talking about you can do nothing about. I and you, Manny, we have no ability to influence gun laws. I think most Americans have no ability to influence gun laws. So what you have to do is just look at it and say, what's happening? And what's likely to continue happening? And then prepare your business for that. And it's not a political statement. It's just saying, where do I think, so what's it going to look like? And how will that affect my business? And, you know, a military buildup, how will that affect my business? And, you know, more people filing for new business licenses, how will that affect my business?
Exactly.
But all of this should affect your scenario. And remember, plans are where I want to be, not where I've been. Don't let inertia drive you. Don't let what you've done drive you. Literally find the target, head for the target, you know, and build that on your scenarios.
Yeah, very well said, Adam. And it just takes some open eyes and some diligence. Like I really like that you go to the supermarket and kind of see the lay of the land, because you do learn a lot of what's happening in the world. If you walk down the shelves and you see them, you know, or you go into the, you know, the price of an avocado is, you know, $4.99 for one. You know, it kind of starts to, you start to put things together of, okay, this is where the everything really kind of meets. This is the end of the funnel where people are actually buying stuff in a sort of retail manner. And so, yeah, I really like that, Adam. Any last words here before we sign off for today?
If you're having trouble with that scenario planning, buy our course, because it will get you there. So if you're struggling to get your scenario plan, come on, folks. It's not that expensive. Buy the course, fill out the charts, and you can get your scenario plan.
All right. Very well said, Adam. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week, and we've got some more news regarding how we're going to be offering the course in a couple different ways. And with that, Adam, have a wonderful rest of the evening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Cheers.